From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made at the 75th commemoration of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. A World War II medic named Pete Dupre offered a haunting, beautiful rendition of America the Beautiful. He was standing alone inside the USS Arizona Memorial. Maybe you're one of the thousands who has seen the performance on YouTube. Now, Pete, of course, performed the song with the instrument that has become his calling card, the harmonica. In fact, for decades now, he's been known as Harmonica Pete. He's 93 years old. He continues to play. 94. I just told he had a birthday. I missed it.
As of Friday.
As of Friday. A year ago, Pete went down to Nashville to record an album of top 40 hits on his harmonica. That was sort of a great surprise trip. He's recently been looking more at doing sporting contests, hockey games. The Amerks, the NHL have come calling, all wanting him and his harmonica. He's at the airport, too. He likes to welcome home honor flight travelers, and he thinks, frankly, we all should take the time to do that. And tonight, Pete's going to play his harmonica at the State of the County address. He's also still telling stories from World War II that we should hear, where he performs some harrowing medical work in the field. And we have asked Pete Dupre, Harmonica Pete, to come in and share his wisdom and maybe even play a bit for us. Harmonica Pete Dupre, welcome back to Connections.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be back.
We love your storytelling, but I need a brief interruption from my colleague Juan Vasquez, who's behind the glass, just popping in real briefly to say hello. Hi, Juan.
Hello there, Evan, and I'm looking forward to this one to talk with Harmonica Pete. And, you know, Connections is the program that not only brings you the newsmakers, but it's also bringing you great storytellers like Pete, too, and we do it every day here on your public radio station, and we're able to do it because of listener support. Folks like you that call in and also go to our websites at WXXINews.org, WEOS.org, or WRUR.org. Make that pledge of support. It's because of listener support that we're able to bring programs like this to you. And Evan, I'm keeping this short because I want to hear what Pete has to say.
Pete has to say, and Pete has to play. He brought, how many harmonicas did you bring, Pete?
Oh, I brought two.
Just two out of how many do you have?
Probably 25, 30.
25 or 30. Yeah, yeah. And you've had some very special ones delivered to you over the years.
These two are very special ones. Probably some of the most expensive ones in the world, but not because they're... Well, I play in... where was I when I played this thing? Good Lord. There's an organization called Luke's Wings, and they're in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. Okay? And Luke's Wings works in conjunction with the hospital, Walter Reed. And Walter Reed is loaded with wounded guys.
Yeah.
And they have a program where they have a fundraiser in one of the large hotels. They do this annually. And I've been asked to play in the last couple of years, which is kind of nice. But when you play the harmonica, usually my harmonicas are all Hohner Company from Germany, the ones I like anyway. And they are sort of, they take an ad out on the program that they pass out at this fundraiser. And when Hohner knew that I was going to be playing, they got a hold of my daughter and said, find out what your dad's favorite harmonica is. And when I went up to play last year, on the podium were two harmonica boxes. And one of them they presented to me, and that's this large one. Then they had an auctioneer, and he auctioned off the other one. The organization was meeting in the Grand Ballroom of the Ritz-Carlton, which was not too bad, not too shabby. And there were 400 people there, but they were all there with the idea of spending money because it was a fundraiser, okay? So the auctioneer came out, and he looked at the harmonicas, and he presented me with the one from Hohner. And then he started to auction off the other harmonica. And it started out at $50, 60, 70, 80, 90, up. And it just kept going up. And it was astounding because the prices were up there, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000. And it went on and on and on, little bits and pieces added. But it got climbing higher, higher. And finally, a little lady in the back of the room hollered out $10,000. and she paid $10,000 for that harmonica. And it, this is a copy of it. It's the same. Okay.
Yours came in a box as a gift.
Yeah, right.
Not $10,000.
No,
wow.
Well, you know, and the owner puts a valuation on them, maybe a couple of $100, but that's still, so I consider that one of the most expensive harmonicas in history.
There you go.
That lady had to pay $10,000.
We're going to play a little bit more later, but can you just give us a couple of bars of anything you want to play
for
us?
Sure.
With the one
one of my favorite guys is Louis Armstrong, and a little bit of Louis then. Anyway, that's the $10,000.
Beautiful.
Now, the other one that I've got here with me today is this fancy gold-colored thing. We did that same program again this year. This one produced the $10,000. That was last year. Mm-hmm. This year they had to change the hotel. They didn't meet in the Ritz-Carlton anymore because there was a new kid in town. And so that fundraiser was at Trump Tower. And they put us up, my daughter and myself had driven down to be there for this event. And they put us up in the Trump Tower, which was kind of nice. And they went through the same scenario, actually, the same auctioneer, same crowd, really. They didn't quite feel as expansive as they had before, but still this harmonica raised $5,000 more. So those two harmonicas, thanks to just those songs that I have played there, have produced for the wounded of Walter Reed $15,000.
That's beautiful.
And I'm kind of pleased with that.
Yeah, you should be. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, let's back up a little bit here.
Okay.
You're 94 years old. Sorry about that, by the way.
Well, I will be Friday.
Oh, you will be on Friday. Okay. Friday. So you are 93 for another couple of days.
I'm 93 until Friday. Yeah.
Okay. Well, happy birthday in advance.
Thank you. Thank you.
94 years young. You grew up where, Pete?
Ogdensburg, New York, originally. I'm a St. Lawrence River guy. My mom was a Canadian, and in Ogdensburg, when I was a kid, there was a hospital. I was born there, actually, and they had a nursing school connected with it. There was no such nursing school on the Canadian side, so my mom was born across the river, and she wanted to be a nurse. So she came across the St. Lawrence and studied and became a nurse at the hospital in Ogdensburg. And then eventually Dad and Mom at some point or other met and wound up. They were both in World War One, okay? And Mom was a Royal Canadian Air Force nurse, and my dad was an infantryman in the 77th Division. They called it Pershing Zone. It was New York's infantry division. And so they were both in World War One, and that, interestingly enough, was 100 years ago now.
That's right.
And, yeah.
And so your father spent, 50 cents on the first harmonica you ever had? Is that correct?
Yeah.
When was that?
Well, my dad was in the tobacco business, and it involved moving around. He was in management, but they'd move him around here, there, and the other place. And so we lived in the East in a number of different, all in New York, actually, Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse, et cetera. But at one move, we were sent down to Bellevue, Pennsylvania. That's a suburb of Pittsburgh. And we moved into a church that had a school. And they also, at the school, had a harmonica band. And this was 1933, and it was the height of the Depression. So schools didn't have the money to have big marching bands and so on, but so they did it by using harmonicas and had created harmonica bands. And it was not unusual at that time to have a school with 150, 200 harmonica players.
Okay. And you were 10 years young?
Yeah. And I figured I'm a new kid in the block, and the one way to get to know everybody else was maybe to have a harmonica. And my dad, and this is again 1933, and it throws a different light on the 50 cents. But he scared up 50 cents and bought me a little Marine Band Hohner harmonica. And
the height of the Depression, 50 cents was...
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get it just sounds like it's only a half a buck. It was a lot more than that.
Yeah.
Because we had five mouths to feed and mom and dad, and you were very cautious about which way you spent the 50 bucks, but...
Or 50 cents, yeah,
I should say, yeah. And that's how I got the first one. I know nothing about music. I never have. Someday maybe I might take a music class.
You still listen and play by ear, right? You've always done that?
Oh, I can't play any other way. I don't read music. I have no idea what it says on that, on the page. But
if I showed you a page of notes, it would not register with you?
No, I'd have scrap paper. No, truly, because I cannot read music. I haven't the foggiest. I know that if it has, if the ball goes up, then the note goes up. That's about what I know.
But when did you know you loved the harmonica, Pete?
Well, I used to. First of all, you had to learn how to play it, you know. And we had a marvelous room in the house for doing that. We had this room had tile walls. And fixtures in there that were tile that resonated sound. And right in the middle of that room, there was a nice chair that you could sit in. And I used to go in there, close the door, and then just play notes, try to single in and find out how to play a particular note. And I think God put a chip in my brain early on, because that's the way I learned how to play. Just listen to the note and say, "Oh, that's where that goes."
And you can remember it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I still can. I can hear a note, I can hear a song on the radio, and it just sticks there. And I'll go and sit in that same room, not the same physically that same room, but one thing about the, and you may have guessed by now that room is the bathroom, and the walls that resonated so well are the tile walls, you see. But it's just sound. Sound has the ability to burrow in up in my mind someplace, and I can pull it back out and transfer it to the keys on the harmonica.
Isn't that amazing? You can't read music, but you have this remarkable memory for it. Do you remember the first song you played?
Yeah. Little Old Lady was the name of it. Well, the Isle of Capri. I don't know. You may have heard it.
Oh, you're going to grab the harmonica for us here. Yeah. Give us a few bars of it.
That's the Isle of Capri, and that's one that I learned. And the other one was A Little Old Lady, and that's an old song from that era. I'm talking 1933, 34.
Do you do requests, by the way? We could have people calling with requests. I mean, your ear is that good. If you know the song, do you think you could figure it out on harmonica?
Yeah, I buried up in that disc that I was talking about are probably... 2,000, 3,000, God knows how many. I'm blessed to be able to do that. I can just pull it out, listen to it, and go play it, and that's how it's happened.
We're talking to Pete Dupre, who's known as Harmonica Pete, and he has played his harmonica around the world at different commemorations and ceremonies, the military installations. He has done sporting contests. How many, by the way? Did you do the NHL contest?
No.
Okay.
No, I didn't do that. But I did the... yes, I did. Well, no, I'm sorry. I did the one here in
the
town.
In the Amherst here?
Yeah.
I know Florida has called, so you may do some NHL stuff.
That didn't materialize.
Oh, okay.
That sometimes happens when those things... not yet. But I've
not yet?
Not yet, yeah.
Okay, and Pete is also going to do. You got a gig tonight?
Yeah, as a matter of fact.
The state of the county address.
State of the county for Miss Denolfo. Mm-hmm.
And when are you going to be playing?
Well, I think just Star-Spangled Banner.
The Star-Spangled Banner?
Yeah, I think the Star-Spangled Banner. Yeah.
Which you could probably do in your sleep by now.
Yeah.
So that's beautiful. And you told the Democrat and Chronicle, you have a very easy time saying yes when people ask you. You obviously still enjoy
it.
Well,
I'm able to do it, you know, right now, my wife passed away about 3 years ago. We had 70 years together. So, but I'm by myself, I do not have wheels. So I come with a price tag, and the price tag is you get me there and bring me back, and then, you know, and I do that, and I've been able by that not to have to suffer through my own cooking because people ask me and then they serve me a meal.
You have such a great sense of humor, Pete, and your children told the Democrat and Chronicle how much they admired what you were able to do when your wife was dealing with her illness and the caregiving that you did. How have you kept your humor through all of that?
Partially, my wife, my wife's memory. We had 70 years, 5 great kids, and the kids treat their dad very, very well. And I'm very lucky to have that relationship with my family. And I just like to do it. I play in church. I belong to Assumption Church in Fairport. And I play usually at least one mass on every Sunday, unless there's a conflict. And I play at pretty much every funeral and it's an unusual thing because people aren't used to a harmonica in church. I think most people's conception of a harmonica today is the blues and whining away with the blues, and I have no problem with that except that I like to play softer, easier stuff, and so I play hymns, and they go over very, very well.
I know you also play at the airport when Honor Flight
comes
back.
When the Honor Flight comes back,
and
yeah.
you have said that we all should be there at one point or another.
I don't think there's a good reason why you haven't gone, if when a flight comes in and it's advertised, and they are. If you want to duplicate something from your youth where you were taken downtown because the band was going to be playing on the 4th of July and you sat on a curb and listened to that band as they marched by, okay, and it was a great thing, and it happens every time the Honor Flight comes back because the airport isn't the airport. If you've not been there when everybody gets off that plane and they go down through a gauntlet, and you can't imagine the emotions that are there. And right now, the guys are at least World War II, but unfortunately, we're all like me at 94, you know, and so our numbers are dwindling rather rapidly. But the other wars, sadly, are there, and the veterans from there are coming in. Many, particularly the Vietnam and Korean guys, were not only ignored, they actually had people throw things at them or spit at them and stuff like that when they came back. So they never had a greeting. They've never had a parade down Main Street, okay? And when they come in now, it's Main Street in spades. It's just emotionally, it's a real, real great thing. And it's absolutely free, and if I'm talking now to the parents of the kids, if you want to take them for something to do when the Honor Flight comes back, take them down there. Get ready to cry because there's a lot of that goes on, but it's happy cry, so I'm playing salesman for the Honor Flight. But if you haven't experienced it, I'm not saying if you haven't seen it. Because you can see it, but you got to experience it, and that's what happens when you're there. The emotions that are there in that airport for that hour or two that goes on are just some once in a lifetime event, really.
Do you still cry?
Do I?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Not quite as much as I used to, I guess, but I unfortunately was watching yesterday a picture of the Syrian gassing and of their own people, and yeah. it was a gut-wrenching thing, and I was crying like a baby.
I think about the soft spot you have in particular, as you say, for Vietnam veterans who came home at a time where it was so charged and there wasn't that parade, there wasn't that widespread public yeah. appreciation. My father served in the Vietnam War, and one thing that I've thought about over the years is how little he's talked about that. And for some who have served, it is not something that they want to talk about. And for some, there is some catharsis or there's something really valuable about talking about it. You're someone, having met you a couple times now, where you know you are a remarkable storyteller, but you also don't seem to blanch at the idea of recalling these stories and telling these stories.
My experiences when they come back off, they get off the plane, they're paraded in, they go through this long gauntlet, as I said, of mm-hmm. cheering people, and then they go into a big room, sit down, and then there's the speakers, Carol, Danolfo, or whoever it might be. Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. There's a program, and the program involves music, but. And where I play there, I make a point of going to the guys who were the gruff old guy that lived down the street. He was in World War II. Well, he wasn't. He was in the Korean War, or he was in the Vietnam War, and he's mad at everybody because he's never had a reception other than a bad one. And I go up to them when I play or when we finish that program and they're sitting and waiting to be taken out. You just go up and they're crying. And these are the tough old birds that said, I don't want to do any of that stuff, you know. They remember how bad it was when they came back. And so all this is a transfer of a long-delayed hooray, welcome home. And I can't stress strongly enough that if you want to have that experience yourself, take your kids down there. Take them there and let them sit effectively on the edge of the curb and watch the band go by, because there's motorcycles there, there's bands of all kinds, there's singing groups, it's just a great thing. Doesn't cost anything other than the time to take the kids there. But you will see the guys that are the honorees, the honor flight guys, and a lot of them are crying. And then they leave the notes or send us notes afterwards saying that, you know, you'd broke a wall down. I never dreamed I would have that kind of thing happen. So if this is considered as an ad for the honor flight,
sure.
I hope it is because, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. We're due for our only break of the hour, and when we come back, Pete has some stories of where he's taken his harmonica around the world. We're going to go to Berchtesgaden, Germany. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about the story that I opened the hour with for the 75th commemoration of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. And if you want to see his rendition of America the Beautiful, that beautiful, haunting rendition that I was talking about, we posted it on our Twitter account. You can find it on YouTube. It's a piece of cake, and you should check it out. It's really, really sort of a moving experience just to check that out. We're also going to talk about going to Nashville, the experience that Pete had there. And a lot more. I do want to touch on his career as a medic. He's briefly on this program in the past talked about that, but I think you should know as well that Harmonica Pete did some really important and amazing work in the field in World War II. So there's so much more to talk about with Harmonica Pete Dupre after our only break of the hour right here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, Captain Ronald Johnson joins us. He's the man who was called in to change things after about 5 days of unrest in Ferguson in 2014. You remember those scenes where there were demonstrations in the street, police wearing riot gear. It looked like violent confrontations were inevitable, but Captain Johnson changed the tone. He's a leading voice in the discussion on police-community relations. He's in Rochester today. We'll talk to him next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and once again, a brief hello from our colleague Juan Vazquez on the third day, the only Wednesday, during our spring membership campaign. Hi, Juan.
Hello, Evan. And we've just taken a quick moment to remind everybody that, of course, that Connections here on your public radio station is listener-supported, and it takes folks like you who are listening right now to take a few minutes and head over to WXXINews.org. You can head over to WEOS.org, or you can go to WRUR.org and click the donate button that is over at the top right of the page, and you can make a pledge of support. And you'll be helping to support the programming that you hear, which includes, of course, Connections that you hear noon to two each day here on this station. And that's why we're able to bring it to you. So if you take just a quick moment, head over to one of those sites at WXXINews.org, WEOS.org, or on WRUR.org.
Juan Vazquez, thanks very much. And let's continue our conversation with Harmonica Pete Dupre. I mentioned a couple of places where his harmonica has gone, but let's talk a little bit about what he did during World War II. You were a medic.
Yeah, there's a misconception when you say medic. Everybody thinks you're out on the battlefield and you got a Red Cross on your arm, and that is a medic. There's different kinds of medics. Medics are in different places. Sometimes when I read about my history, it sounds like I was on the battlefield. And I wasn't. It sounds like I was in a position where I would shoot, and that's true. But what I shot was morphine, and what we were. I was in an Army General Hospital in England, and that put us 25, 30 miles from the battlefields of Europe across the Channel, and we would get the patients. They would fly them over. The field medic, the guy you think of when you think medic, and I'm not trying to put medics, the field medics down, but I don't want to create the impression that I was out on a field.
Sure.
Okay. But they were brought to us, and it was a fascinating time because my job at that time, I was what they call a ward master. I had 40 patients that basically I was responsible for care and treatment, and not, but we were highly trained medics. We weren't just a bunch of guys that they
dress a wound.
You're going to be
sure.
A medic. Yeah. I had trained basically at Lawson General Hospital in Atlanta, and our textbooks, and we used to start class at 2 in the morning, and end at 7 at night, and we did that for 6-7 days a week. But we used the New York State Boards for Nurses for 1941 as our textbooks, so we were studying all of that medical stuff, plus the fact that my sister was a nurse and my mother had been a nurse in World War I. Okay, so I had that medical background, if you will. But we would get them. One of my jobs was to stand when a shipment and. If you think of wounded soldiers coming in as raw material in a factory, that's essentially what we were. Here was something that had to be repaired, and it was the person. Okay, so they would come to the ward. I was standing there with a clipboard, just double checking what it said on the tag on the guy's uniform, who he was, and so on. Make sure that I put Jose in the right bed, and
sure.
So on, But they would come in, and these guys were bleeding. They had been taken care of by the field medic and then flown over for the heavier duty treatment. And I started out, I'd say something like, hey, you got a ticket home now, or that takes care of there was so much for your war, you know, and that. And almost exclusively, the reaction would be, what do you mean home? No, no, I don't want to go home. No, God, no. Stop the bleeding in my arm. No, I got to get back up with the guys.
They wanted you to fix them so they could go back out.
I got to get back up to with my guys. No, no, I don't want to go home. And that was standard. That was the standard reaction. These guys would be horribly injured. But they had to get, if you think Brotherhood of War and the various shows that have come out through the years, they are very authentic. But that was a collective opinion. No, no, no.
And Pete, last time you were here, if you wouldn't mind recounting the story, you told a story that just sort of stopped me in my tracks where you talked about you know, unfortunately, in some of those moments, you know, we're talking about soldiers who, as you say, have gone through horrific injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one moment where I think another one of your colleagues handed you a leg. I mean,
I was standing outside the operating room, and the head nurse was open. She opened up the door and she said, "Pete, stay right here." And she came back in a couple of minutes and literally handed me a leg. And she said they had just amputated. He was so badly injured that they had to amputate the leg. But they handed it to me, and she said, the doctor said to tell you that that boy was a Catholic and that leg has to be buried. And I'm a Catholic. I've never heard that. One of these days I got to check that out. But in any event, that was a horrific thing. She literally handed me a leg and turned around and walked back in.
Just amazing. So
that's what we were trained to do. We
sure.
were taking care of that situation.
So this is what medic Pete Dupre was doing in World War II. But you also had your harmonica over there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I've had the harmonica since that move when it was in the sixth grade or whatever it was. So that's attached to me, yeah.
And how did you use it in the war?
I just said the hours were crazy, and training hours for one thing. We would train all day studying all the anatomy, physiology, et cetera. And we'd end the day by the sergeant in charge of the whole unit would take us out, and we'd march around some of the fields around Atlanta there where the hospital was. And we would go on a march, just like a 50-pound bag or a 20- or 30-pound load on our backs and march. And if you ever watched a march, the guys at the tail end of the march are in total disarray. Up in front, they're right there where the sound is and the beat of the feet and so on. Everything sounds nice up front. In the back, it's like somebody dropped a bomb and everybody's going in different directions. So my commanding officer thought, well, okay, Dupre, you get in the back and play a march. And that's what I had to do. And he never considered that was my breathing that he was taking away from me. But yeah, we used to do that. But I play at bedside a lot just to quiet things down or just
bedside for injured soldiers.
Yeah, yeah.
To kind of calm them, to soothe a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and or if they'd like a particular song or something, you know, and. I remember one time I had to play an Irish song because I checked in this man and I noticed that his name was Cohen. And I said Cohen. And he said, "No, my name is Cohan." He said, "Say Cohan, sonny, and don't you be forgetting it." And he was an Irish guy fighting for the Americans, okay, so that was interesting. Anyway, we had literally thousands of guys that came back, and then all of a sudden the things changed. The Germans did surrender. And when they did, instantly they locked the doors of our hospital because there was no more raw material coming in, no more wounded soldiers were going to be coming. And so they said, "We're going to send you back home for 30 days. In the meantime, we're going to tear this whole hospital down, take it back to the U.S., redo it, and then you're going over to Japan for the invasion of Japan," because they expected a million casualties in the invasion of Japan. And they took us and put us on the Queen Elizabeth, and we went back to the States. In the meantime, they dropped the bomb, and all of a sudden, we didn't have to go over to Germany or to Ireland, not to Japan,
yeah.
I should say.
Yeah. Talking to Pete Dupre, and one of the stories that stands out to me was the trip to the Eagle's Nest, Adolf Hitler's Third Reich mountaintop meeting house at Berchtesgaden, Germany, which is, I guess it's now a tourist attraction.
Very much so, yeah.
And so you take an elevator ride, you kind of go up to the top. When were you there, Pete?
Two and a half years ago, I guess it was.
And I've read that you got on the door, you got on and the doors closed, and there's people all over, from all over the world. So it's not all Americans, and a couple dozen of you. You get to the top, and you come out, and they're singing God Bless America.
We were on board. I said when they opened up the doors, and so I started to play God Bless America, and then the elevator stopped.
And they joined in?
And, people just stopped cold because we got out, we're singing away, and it went over pretty well. Literally, that is a worldwide tourist place to visit, you know, so they weren't all English-speaking people, but they knew God Bless America. But we opened that door, and it's like getting a theater curtain opened up, you know, and here come these guys singing away God Bless America.
Did that give you a little chill? Was that?
Oh, yeah, sure. But we were doing what we wanted to do. There's only the war was long since over with when we were there. This is just a couple of years ago, actually. But then up there at Burgess Garden, over one of the doors of that place, and those of us who watched TV when Hitler was there dancing around on the patio with Eva Braun or whatever her name was, his girlfriend there, and that's where we were. It's right up at the top of the mountain, the sights from there are absolutely phenomenal. You're looking at you can see. For hundreds of miles, I should say, it's just great. But it was where the high command of the German command built that for Hitler as a surprise, and so we were up there anyway, and everybody joined in with. I was playing God Bless America.
I'm just picturing elevator going to the top. You've got people from around the world, and Pete just grabs the harmonica, and all of a sudden everyone is in unity. That's a beautiful story. Another beautiful story is the one I kind of opened the hour with. And again, if you want to check out the YouTube video of what I'm about to describe, I posted it on our Twitter account, at Evan Dawson. It was at the 75th commemoration of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. And there's this video that you can find of Pete alone inside the USS Arizona Memorial.
Yeah.
And playing America the Beautiful. How did that come together?
We were visiting there with I belong to the Greatest Generation Foundation.
Yep.
and we've been able through the financing that they have to visit these various places. And we were there like a bunch of tourists. We went out we had met the admiral in charge of Pearl Harbor, and he took us out there. But it was a whole loaded boat. It wasn't just our little group. And he went around and showed us all about what was there and what we were looking at. And then they just said, everybody off the boat or off the memorial and get back to the boat except you. And they had me stand there underneath the flag, and it was the 7th of December, Pearl Harbor Day. This is 2 years ago now. And it was an absolutely magnificent Sunday afternoon, just like it was on Pearl Harbor Day. They had me play America the Beautiful, and it was perfect timing, and it just went over very, very well. And it was recorded, as you said, and a lot of people have seen it because people say that, wow, you know, that they saw it and enjoyed it, so.
I thought about asking Pete to play a few bars for him, but I think you should just watch the video because it is... It's kind of use the word haunting. I mean, it's this beautiful.
There's nothing else in it except those notes coming out of there.
And this imagery just really amazing. Well, let's turn to a different kind of music. Pete had a chance about a year ago to go down to Nashville, and I'm holding a CD. Now, they're not for sale. They're not commercially for sale. This is just sort of a fun experience for Pete. But you got to go down, and I'm looking at all of these songs that you got to record, and
songs you grew up with.
Songs you grew up with, yeah. but there's a lot of stuff in there. There's Danny Boy, Piano Man, there's all kinds. Somewhere Over the Rainbow. I could kind of go down this long list of songs, and I'm wondering how you got this chance to go down to Nashville. How did that come together?
Well, the organization that I am with, the Greatest Generation Foundation, has backers who are people of substance, translation. They got a lot of money, okay? And we were in, oddly enough, and I'm not name-dropping to impress anybody, but we were, the answer to your question is, where were you? We were in the lounge of the hotel next to the Brandenburg Gate in Berlin. This is 2 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And we were sitting there, and one of the financiers that we had was there, and I was asked a question, what if you had the opportunity, what wish do you have that could be fulfilled, you know? And it was just an odd question, and I said, oh, that's easy. I'd like to pass on my music, such as it is, to my family, and so just eventually there would be something left of me. And that was all there was to it. And then months later, my phone rang one day, and I was told that I was going to be taken down to Chicago to meet a country western star, and he was going to lead me to Nashville, and he did. And I went to a studio in Nashville and recorded 40 songs.
40 songs?
Yeah.
Nice studio?
Yeah. Very nice. Yeah. I would hope someday that I'd be able to do that again. But in any event, that's the history of that. There you go.
And so you've got this harmonica, Pete Dupre, this album there. And again, not commercially for sale right now, but how did you choose what you wanted to record? You know, what were you thinking about when you said
I got songs I grew up with, just that simple. I got a phone call, and they said that was going to happen. And they said, we need a list of songs. And again, I don't write or read music at all, so I just took a pad and I wrote down songs that I grew up with. And that's the history behind it. And I said, like, how many? And the answer was, oh, 40. So you read off some of the titles, and they were.
Yeah, I grew up with Piano Man, sir.
Okay.
You did not grow up with Piano Man.
No, no. But I can play it.
You sure? Yeah. And most of the songs on there are songs I know that you grew up with.
Yeah.
And what does your family say about it?
Well, it went over very well, obviously, and. And I enjoyed it. It fulfilled a dream.
Do you feel like a little bit of a music star?
I don't know if you call it star, but I got quite a jolt in that direction by the Democrat and Chronicle article of a couple of months ago. That's like an avalanche of requests to play here, there, and the other place, which I love to do.
All right, so I was going to ask you that. You're going to get yourself in trouble here, Pete, because if you're saying you're going to say yes, people may contact you and ask you to come out. You do some things around town.
Yeah, I do.
Pete Dupre, a harmonica Pete, he'll probably say yes if you ask him, and he's really good. Can you play something for us now? Anything you want, Pete?
All right.
We'd love to hear something from you.
You said Piano Man.
Of course. Well done. And again, he doesn't read music, so that's a song that you love the song, and you're going to pick it up and you play it by ear. How long does it take you to get a song down when you're playing by ear?
I'd never gauged that.
I mean, does it take a long time, or is it...
No, it doesn't take too long. If I can remember what note comes before the other note.
But you don't even know what the notes are.
I don't know what the notes... I know what they sound like. No, it sounds crazy, but I truly know nothing at all about music.
Well, Pete, I
know sound.
But you know the sound.
Yeah.
If I were smart, I would have had a little bit of preparation to kind of give you a quiz, you know, play a little music for you and then ask you to kind of play it for us. But I didn't have that ready for us here. But I have so much enjoyed this. I cannot see the phones. I know there's a phone call. I can't see them. Spark is all strange here, Meg and Mac, so I don't know if there's... but we got a few minutes left with Pete Dupre. So... Pete, I just want to ask you a couple other questions before we let you go here.
Yeah.
You know, you're doing the State of the County tonight here.
Yeah.
And you have this great humor. You clearly love to keep doing this here. Are you also good-humored about – have you resisted cynicism? Sometimes as people get older, they look at younger generations and they're sort of cynical, or they think, you know, they couldn't have done what we did. I wonder how you feel about that.
Well, that's a negative thing, and I don't allow any negative things. I truly, people that know me know that I just don't let anything bother me, and that's a direction that I take. I call it cynic, call it whatever you want. If it's a negative thing, I don't have time for that, and that's my motto. That's my way. I love.
But there are those who think about the Greatest Generation. There are those who think about the service that happened. You know, what you described this hour is something that a lot of younger Americans are not going to be able to relate to, which is the idea that there you were as a medic in England, helping soldiers who were, you know, their lives were at risk.
Yeah,
and you were told, get ready to come home, and then get ready, you're going to go to Japan, and there's going to be a million casualties. Yeah. And of course, you didn't have to do that, but you were ready to do it. That's what service was to you. And there are those from the Greatest Generation and others who I have heard say they don't know if that could happen again. And I don't know how you feel about that.
Scares the heck out of me. I don't like the way things are going at all. Not that I can control it, but I see repeating.
History things. Repeating?
Yeah, yeah. Unlearned history.
What's an example of that, Pete?
They do something. They don't do something. I guess that's a crazy way to answer your question, but there's always some they, and you got to go get they because they're not doing it the way it's supposed to be done. And so what do you do? Well, then you go shoot them.
So you're talking about the way we talk about other people who are they.
Other people are they.
The other.
Yeah.
Instead of looking for common humanity.
Yeah, and we're always ready to go after they, whoever they are, without trying to say, let's really get rid of the politics into this. Let's. I'd love to see the leaders of the world sit in a room like this and talk, you know, and they say, well, that could never possibly happen, but maybe it could, but. It's just here I am at 94, when we talk about things, we talk about what war are we talking about, and because in this period of time I've lived through a number of wars, and they're just I just see them repeating themselves. Then why? Because they don't do it our way, or they. Did something and I didn't like it, so I got to change it. And they scare me.
I think what Pete's telling us is the opposition in wars change, but there's always a they.
Mm-hmm. Always, yeah.
And we have to create a world where we stop othering.
But God said the same thing. Nero said the same thing. Aristotle said the same thing. You know. So we aren't learning too well, or haven't learned too well, but it scares me.
Well, Pete, I have really enjoyed the hour with you. Have a wonderful time. The State of the County address tonight Pete Dupre will be there. He presumes playing the Star Spangled Banner on his harmonica.
I think so.
Thank you. And thank
you. You're very welcome.
Thank you for the work that you have done for this country, the work that you do for this community, and for playing the harmonica and reminding us all to get out to the airport to welcome back the honor flights. Great reminders all around. And we'll see you around town with your harmonica, Pete.
Okay, good. Thanks for inviting me.
You got it.
Happy to be here.
Harmonica Pete Dupre, just a remarkable man. Let's get a break and more connections next.